Money FM 89.3, best of prime time.
This is Primetime on Money FM 89.3. I'm Howie Lim. Now, in 2020, the World Bank ranked Singapore second internationally when it comes to ease of doing business, and global MNCs continue to set their sights on making Singapore home. But has Singapore maybe become a victim of its own attractiveness? With a burgeoning tech sector, Southeast Asia is facing a talent crunch, and Singapore's no exception. Even agencies like GovTech have to compete with big boys for tech talent. So depending on foreign tech talent may not be a sustainable strategy for long. What then can businesses do to ensure they have access to a workforce that meets their needs? For more insights, we speak to Tony Low, partner at Heidrick & Struggles. Tony, thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me here, Howie.
So let's start with the importance of developing next-gen capabilities for that steady pipeline of leadership. But also, what are next-gen capabilities?
Well, it's useful to know what we are seeing on the ground and what we have been developing the leaders in. What we are seeing, Howie, is that specific product or technical knowledge continues to be key in addition to versatility and agility. And the mindset increasingly has been to think global and act local. Well, I have a client, which is a major warehouse automation installer and equipment producer, that has in the past 18 months seen a boom in their business. And in the next 3 years, they are poised to grow 2x. One of their key success factors, Howie, has been their ability to meet local specifications to a very high standard by customizing to the client's specific needs. But that's, Howie, also their biggest challenge. And that is to find good local talent to be the effective interconnectors between the centers of excellence in mature markets and also the local emerging markets to drive consistent standards and quality growth across the region. So increasingly, on top of digitalization, versatility, and being very agile, we are seeing the trend to hyper-localize for companies seeking to extract most value and growth, especially in the emerging market.
So how do we do that? How do we develop the next-gen capabilities that you just mentioned? It sounds like, at the risk of oversimplification, the person needs to have global experience.
That's a very good question, Howie. At Heidrick, we do a lot of strategic workforce planning and succession planning for our clients to succeed at their strategies in the mid to long term. And core to that has been to understand what they need to buy and develop in the next 3 to 5 years. So strategic workforce planning is as important to strategy planning and financial planning. And we see some of our most progressive clients do that very well.
They do it all together? Like, is there one that needs to be prioritized, or can you do it all together?
That's a good question. It implies that a certain sequence to it, but the reality is it's iterative. Your strategy very often has to be informed by the talent availability on the ground. And that's one thing we've found that some companies, if they tend to do this very linearly, they tend to be then therefore less agile to meet the needs that their operations require on the ground. And I was going to say, Howie, as well, planning is one key aspect. The key is also the ability to execute. And execution is also an area where we see companies falter. It's critical that organizations implement the right programs and policies once they have an idea what they are across the hiring process, talent development of existing high potential talents, and employee retention policy and strategies that work for them globally and also in the local market. And increasingly, we are seeing that companies which have a clear and authentic sense of purpose is becoming more and more successful in the attraction and retention game. This is especially so if you look at our multi-generational workforce today, that the bulk of them is going to come from the millennials. And by 2025, WEF tell us that 75% of the global workforce are going to be millennials. And having a clear, authentic sense of purpose beyond the company's operations and core business and how that connects their employee to that larger purpose is going to be extremely important.
Okay, let me put you on the spot then. What are those successful attracting and retaining top talent strategies?
Well, at Heidrick, we found two key drivers around retention, and that is engagement and progression. And under engagement, I've already talked about purpose and connecting to larger issues like environment, sustainability. And perhaps this is also why you see in the past 5 years, companies are beginning to have a clearer narrative around their ESG policies and strategies, or actually hiring senior chief sustainability officers into their top ranks to drive the sustainability agenda. Well, my children often ask me what I do for a living. In the past 5 to 7 years, I also find the need to change my narrative from helping companies to get the best bang for the buck, look for talent, to actually putting talents into meaningful jobs that actually help them change the world. So you could see that evolution of that purpose narrative being more and more important to connect, not just to my children, but also to employees, to drive them towards higher productivity and performance. I would just quickly touch on the second factor, and that's the sense of progression and their own personal journey in driving and connecting to that higher purpose. One of my clients actually told me a very interesting story. It is a dot-com company that now is trying to do a second 2.0 reinvention of itself in the digital era. And there's a higher purpose that the employees actually rally around and could see meaning behind that. However, the personal connection of their role to the higher purpose was lacking. Lacking in the sense of line of sight to how they can effect and be really part of that change, because that's not how they've been doing things. And number two, can I really do it? Do I have the skills, the aptitude, and the ability to actually make that change? So it is therefore the responsibilities of the leader, not just to talk about that higher purpose, Howie, but also support their employees in making that personal change and connection and see that they have an impact and can contribute to that purpose.
You've got to have your workers realize they're more than just a cog in the wheel. They need to have a vested interest, so to speak. They need to get behind the cause. If they're not behind the cause, why should I care?
They need to get behind the cause personally. It has to be meaningful personally for them. And this can manifest in different ways. Some of them could say, what's in it for me? And I think progressive, inclusive leaders need to read behind those words and understand the cry for connection, getting behind that cause. And if you double click on that, this could mean a variety of interventions, the key of which, of course, is mindset development, leadership development. At Hydrate, we do quite a bit of that. We have a model called digital dexterity that actually helps develop leaders in four key aspects of digital dexterity. That's one, but that's not the whole story. We also have to look at how we design the structure, realign the accountability, and also the reward and incentive systems that can show comprehensively that you are supporting your employees and your leaders to get behind that cause.
What's the biggest challenge? I imagine mindset change.
Well, the challenge is multifold, to be honest. I think at the individual company level, mindset is the most difficult to shift. As I shared, I have very young children. My youngest is a one-year-old baby who's learning to take his first step. And we were observing something very interesting. If he thinks too much or he realizes that others are observing him taking that first step, he tend to fail, versus if he's distracted, he can take those few steps. That's very applicable to leaders as well. And what we see is we tend to over-amplify the risk of change and underestimate our ability to navigate and overcome.
But you also don't want to be too hands-off, right? I mean, I get maybe that method works with junior, but as a leader of the company, you don't want to be too hands-off.
You absolutely cannot be hands-off. And I think that's the message. Indeed, we rely on a spectrum on this agility, versatility, and I think the ability to learn and change.
Yeah.
And the key is therefore, as leaders, how can we support our employees along this spectrum? Some are more predisposed and some are more agile. Some can navigate, surf the wave of change much better than the others. Then the key therefore becomes not just selecting and then onboarding the right talent with the right mindset, but also looking at developing your employees. And the degree of receptiveness to change can vary by levels, by functions, and then therefore tailoring an intervention and support and development program to help your workforce basically take that first step and know that it's okay and they are doing this towards a larger cause than themselves. So it is multifold. It starts with understanding your own organization, the availability of talent out there that could help augment your current organization. Then therefore also understanding what kind of program that can be tailored to support your employees and also your leaders in making that change.
Let's talk about that big issue, the talent crunch. What are some of the trends you're seeing in the tech industry here in Singapore and in Asia? What areas need focus, so to speak?
The talent crunch is very real. In a sense, COVID has shone a spotlight on the talent crunch issue. it is really threefold. It's quantity, quality, and also access. And some of the key trends that we see is that the hyperlocalization and therefore the ability to search, find access, and also therefore bring on board new capabilities that knows the local clients well, knows the culture well, and also can drive therefore your local operations connecting to your global standards. So that's one key area of crunch. Now, we also see that clients are increasingly investing in the digital B2C model. And this includes B2B clients, the traditional brick and mortar clients that we have. I have a cement producing client, which is as brick and mortar as it gets, as one of the largest cement producers in the region. In the past 5 years, has really been looking to move into the B2C business, servicing small homeowners in finished plug and build building products beyond producing cement for the large builders and developers, to basically diversify away from their core cement business. What this means is they're therefore looking for digital talents that are experts in channels and are experts in products development, conceptualization, and also R&D and innovation engineers to basically go up and down the value chain in the building and construction materials sector. Finding this talent is difficult, but what went well for my client has been that they started early. And with COVID in the past 18 months, as you can imagine, there was a construction slump, but a boom in small homeowners making improvements to their house. And the channels that they have laid, the pipes that they have already put in terms of connecting to the consumers, came in very handy in another revenue segment that they created for themselves. So in terms of the trends, there is a trend towards digital B2C models. And I think traditional businesses in Southeast Asia will continue to dedicate significant investments towards digitalization, whether to improve customer processes or to transform their internal processes. We also see, Howie, that the investor mindset and models in Southeast Asia are changing. Traditionally, investments in local business have investors sitting on the board with very little additional contribution apart from finances. But I think more and more, especially in the past 2 to 3 years, we see investors are becoming more hands-on, providing advice, keeping an eye out for faster growth, and backing individual talents with the plans to build the business together. This is based on the concept of really the premium on talent, a buy and build model that allows for accelerated growth, basically financing the risk for talented individuals to actually see the additional growth without the legacy of traditional business model.
What makes this region attractive to tech companies, that is?
It is interesting that you asked that question. And Southeast Asia, outside of India and China, really is the next frontier of growth for growth-hungry companies, primarily due to two key factors, demographic and really a growing middle class. The middle class of Southeast Asia will double in the next 10 years by 2030. And this is really augmented by rapid urbanization. By 2050, I think 70% of Southeast Asia will be living in cities with a relatively young, skilled population and rising affluence. Companies see this region as the next frontier of growth with a huge middle class that will consume and also partake in the digitalization wave beyond the rising tide in Southeast Asia, that a few boats are being lifted. We know the Singapore story, and I think this is a unique opportunity for Singapore to ride the rising tides of Southeast Asia and the technology bandwagon. We do not have a large domestic base, but I think we have really successfully differentiated ourselves as a business hub with a positive reputation and track record for reliability and commitment to IP protection and an educated workforce and modern and developed infrastructure. This is a unique opportunity, and we see that actually the government recognizes that. I think huge credit has to be given to the Singapore government, not just for getting the health situation under control, but being very long-term and strategic in thinking about the new strategic positioning of Singapore in the new economic landscape post-COVID. And you see that being announced in the 2020 budget, whether is it the Alliance for Action, which brings various actors from governments to the private sector to adopt a startup approach to develop and prototype ideas, or innovative financing when together with Temasek to provide co-investment of $1 billion in the local enterprise funding platform to help Singapore enterprises transform and expand overseas. So the long-term strategic thinking of the government and the ability for it to execute those policies and plans will bode well in the next years post-COVID.
I wish we had more time. Thank you so much for your insights today, and please stay safe.
No problem. Thank you for having me here, Howie.
Tony Low, partner at Heidrick & Struggles. This is Money FM 89.3.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.